Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, one-on-one with Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin on his decision to pull the controversial Open Public Records Act reform bill.
It's clear that there is some work to be done, and we're going to take the time that we need.
Plus, just days away from U.S. Senate candidate Andy Kim's court hearing on challenges to the state's election ballot design. Dozens of current and former female lawmakers call to abolish the party line.
I've seen the ways that this system really prevents and creates a glass ceiling for women to move ahead.
Also, calls for a criminal investigation by Congressman Jeff Van Drew after touring what some say is a deplorable housing complex in Atlantic City.
We have to be together, shoulder to shoulder, saying we're not going to put up with it.
And doctors-to-be, New Jersey's medical students celebrate Match Day, unveiling the next steps in their journey to becoming physicians.
I have to pinch myself to think that all the hard work came to this day, and I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to care for communities that look like mine. It's amazing.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us this Friday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. The bill to overhaul the state's Open Public Records Act is dead for now. After intense outcry from the public, lawyers, watchdog groups, and journalists, lawmakers pulled the fast-tracked legislation on Thursday, just an hour before it was scheduled to go for a committee vote. Democratic leaders are instead sending the bill back for amendments. They heard hours of testimony from critics who warn the so-called reforms would gut government transparency by limiting access to things like email and call logs and even digital calendars of public agencies and officials, items that have been used to uncover scandals like Bridgegate, to name one. Supporters, who mostly include associations representing counties and towns, argue they're being inundated with requests, and the current law doesn't keep up with the digital age. So where does the bill go from here? Senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan reports.
Chants and cheers greeted news that a fast-track bill to reform Jersey's Open Public Records Act, or OPRA, had gotten temporarily derailed Thursday, yanked off an assembly committee agenda by its sponsor after furious protests. The chair agreed.
I spent time this week relaying your concerns on this bill, many concerns that I personally share.
Opponents accused top Democrats of trying to ram through the measure. They claimed would essentially gut OPRA and cripple the public's right to request government records. The outcry prompted Speaker Craig Coughlin to comment, "I'm inspired that so many people have taken an interest and engaged in this legislation. Right now, we're working on various amendments to ensure we get the bill right." Senator Andrew Zwicker agrees.
Both sides, we're at a point now where people are mostly just yelling at each other and no longer having conversations about what can we do to make sure that this is a bill that actually modernizes OPRA.
He says modern technologies outrun the 20-year-old law, raising valid privacy concerns. But the new measure would bar OPRA access to logs of public official emails and phone calls and require specific names in email exchanges, complicating requests. Moreover, the bill would make such reforms retroactive, killing current OPRA filings and appeals that don't comply. That's a non-starter for Zwicker.
Anytime there's a proposal to do something retroactively, there's always a case in front of the courts or something going on that it causes a real issue.
When OPRA was signed into law, we really didn't have identity theft like we have today. We didn't have the data mining that we have today.
Lori Buckaloo's with the League of Municipalities, which lobbied lawmakers for years, pushing to restrict OPA requests over privacy and cost concerns. Fierce lobbying will continue as this bill gets reworked.
We know individual towns are reaching out to their legislators with the impact OPA has had on their communities.
We do not have statistics or numbers that support that abuse of OPA is a widespread, ongoing, terrible issue that's gumming up the wheels of government.
New Jersey's ACLU agrees complying with OPA does take time and money, but says the answer lies in digital upgrades to government record keeping, not added restrictions. And it will bitterly fight a new provision that could make folks who file OPA requests pay legal fees if they end up in court.
And it's really a disservice to the residents of New Jersey, especially folks who are lower to middle income who don't have the $300 for filing fees in the court.
What happens next? Senate sponsor Paul Sarlo still pushing for fast action, stating, "I look forward to further developing these proposals by having everyone involved work together in the weeks ahead before the budget process gets fully engaged in early April." But Mark Pfeiffer, who helped launch OPA decades ago, advises lawmakers, take it easy.
If you take a year, year and a half to dig into this and come up with a solution that will last another 20 or 25 years, you're doing really well.
But the heat is on this issue, and it's not likely to get backburnered for long. I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
Minutes after the bill was pulled, Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin issued a statement that said, in part, his chamber will move at a slower pace to tweak the bill, promising to meet with the various stakeholders and work together in updating the legislation. Good government groups, though, say that may not be enough. Many are calling for an OPA study commission to get it right. It would be a group composed of mayors, municipal clerks, and members of the media and open government advocates, among others, all to figure out how the law should fulfill its need. Some 100 municipalities are on board with the idea, but are legislative leaders. Let's ask one. I'm joined now by Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin. Mr. Speaker, thanks for your time. Let me ask you about the statement that you put out on the OPA bill, saying that you and your chamber will take the time needed to look at these reforms. What does that timeline look like for you? And would you support pulling this bill entirely to allow for a study commission?
Well, I think that the statement says exactly what we mean, that I don't have a timeline for doing this. Look, here's what has happened. We put the bill in committee, as is the process in for all bills that we consider. The purpose of doing it is to gather input from citizens. In a committee, anyone in a state can come in and talk about what they think about a given piece of legislation. It was reported widely this was being rushed and things like that. I had never committed to a time frame for doing this. If people had come in and it was favorable and we were able to do it, we probably would have passed it on this coming Monday. But it's clear that there is some work to be done, and we're going to take the time that we need. I think the notion of a study commission is not necessary. We have two legislative committees that are undertaking this bill. And have taken testimony. I'm not really sure what else a study commission would do. That's what we do as legislators.
Your counterpart, Senator Sarlo, on this bill said that he would like to see this get done by April, of course, before all of the budget negotiations really get down in earnest. Are you aligned with that? You said that you never committed to a timeline.
Look, I think Senator Sarlo, first, let me commend the Senate sponsor, Senator Sarlo, Assemblyman Danielson, for the work that they have done to try to modernize this, which is something I think that is everyone agrees. So the truth of the matter is, I think if we can get this done in April, that would make an awful lot of sense.
Mr. Speaker, you wouldn't consider that a fast-tracked pace?
Well, I mean, the notion of the bill has been around for quite some time, and now the bill has been out. It'll be well over a month before we ever voted on it. So You know, I think that it, look, how long is right time is sort of alchemy. There's no specific notion of it. You got, I think most importantly, what is most important is that we get it right, Brianna, and not commit to a time frame. But look, I think that every voting session will offer an opportunity to get things done, and we should look at it in terms of being able to get this done, because there are reasons to change the bill.
What parts of the bill, Mr. Speaker, do you think need to be changed? And are there items like email logs, like call logs, the fee shifting, that you might consider not changing?
Well, I think, look, what we need to do, we've been working on some amendments over the last several days. I'm going to take a look at what's been developed. I think on some of those items that you talked about, like fee shifting, I'm open to looking at the language that's in there. You know, judges have an awful lot of discretion right now in the law as it exists, and whether we need to, how we need to address that, I think is something we ought to look at. Logs and text and things like that are something that, you know, we want to make sure we have the we get that right.
Fair enough. Assembly Speaker Craig Coughlin, as always, we thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much. Nice to see you again.
We're nearing the end of a hectic month of county party nominating conventions, with the candidates for U.S. Senate primary securing endorsements up and down the state. Last night was another landslide victory for GOP contender Curtis Bashaw, easily winning the Middlesex County Republican convention with 67% of the vote, making Bashaw the frontrunner in the GOP race. First Lady Tammy Murphy also locked in a win with Middlesex County Democrats, who voted by a show of hands to give her the organizational line over rival Congressman Andy Kim. Both the process of how county committees vote and what's known as the party line on ballots have garnered national attention this year because of the hotly contested race to replace embattled senior Senator Bob Menendez. Well, this week, a coalition of 40 female elected officials and former candidates issued a letter calling to abolish the line, a system many argue gives party-backed candidates an advantage. Among them, two former lawmakers, including former Assemblywoman Sadaf Jaffer, who joins me now. Well, thanks so much for joining me on the show. Let me ask you, aside from the obvious that the letter is calling for the line to be abolished, what specifically are you saying about the challenges it creates for candidates, and why round up this pretty long list of past and current elected officials?
Well, you know, I think for myself and a lot of women who go into politics, we do it because we want to represent the needs of our diverse communities, but certainly of women in our state. And in my time, I've seen the ways that this system really prevents and creates a glass ceiling for women to move ahead. There might be some representation. So we're at, you know, around a third of the legislature, but when it comes to state and local government, it's even lower. And in terms of getting true leadership roles, those somehow seem to keep eluding women. And so, you know, as I was reflecting on my experience and starting to talk about it a bit more, and with so much attention being drawn to the line, and I think maybe even some hope that we might be able to get rid of the system and have a fairer ballot. You know, I think in any political system, if you are with a political party, you would face some pressures or some opinions from others in your party or others in this political universe. But those people don't usually also control the ballot.
Are there examples that come to mind where you had a bill you were ready to vote a certain way on, but the pressure of the party influenced that?
Yeah, so I think, you know, two of the big pieces of legislation that I was opposed to last year were the Election Transparency Act, which doubled the contribution limits for campaigns. And, you know, I spoke about it, but as much as some of my colleagues might have thought that, yeah, we don't need more money in politics, this was something that was a priority for a lot of people. And so it did go through. Similarly, I had a lot of critiques of the Stay in Jay program, that it gave the biggest benefit to wealthy older property owners.
Let me get your take very quickly on the Essex County Democratic Chairman Leroy Jones, who wrote an op-ed this week calling for a uniform ballot. Where do you stand on that? And would that solve some of the problems that we just talked about?
I think that there's a lot of work that the party could and should have done a long time ago. I only knew my context, which is that we do have a convention, whatever the critiques of the convention might be, to figure out our endorsed candidates in my county. But other counties don't even have a convention, or the votes in the convention are only advisory and the chair makes the unilateral decision on who to endorse. So that is certainly a problem within the party. I think that if we are going to have a fair primary, we should start this year. Instead of pushing it to the legislature, which I'm very skeptical would be able to make this change, because everyone who puts them on the line doesn't want to see this change because it takes away from their power.
Former Assemblywoman Sadaf Jaffer, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We are continuing our coverage tonight on a troubled public housing complex in Atlantic City. Congressman Jeff Van Drew today met with residents of Stanley Homes Village, where more than 100 people who live there sued more than 2 years ago over a lack of heat, hot water, and other poor living conditions, a situation they say has yet to be resolved and for some has only gotten worse. Van Drew's visit comes after he asked HUD, that's the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, to take over, but the head of the agency abruptly stepped down. Ted Goldberg reports.
We have to be together, shoulder to shoulder, saying we're not going to put up with it.
Congressman Jeff Van Drew is stepping up his involvement in the battle over poor living conditions at Stanley Homes Village. The second district representative is calling for the Inspector General of HUD to investigate the Atlantic City Housing Authority, or ACHA. They manage Stanley Homes Village, where residents have long complained about problems with heat, gas, and mice.
People are paying, breaking their back, paying taxes. They deserve to know that nobody minds taking care of older folks like this lady or folks that need help, but it's got to go to help them, and we don't know where it's going. And we know that everything's going sideways.
I have no heat, no hot water, and this has been months. It's cold.
No heat and no hot water this morning. We have none.
This is the second day. This is all the time.
This is our...
One at a time, please.
Go ahead. What are we supposed to do? It's getting ridiculous. People got to go to work. For us that work... Nobody wants to keep carrying hot to hot water upstairs.
Stanley Homes is the state's oldest public housing complex, and more than 100 of its residents are suing the ACHA over their living conditions. They say money has been wasted on bad contracting work, and other problems have been ignored.
We all have certain rights. This is the 21st century, and to hear what's going on in this housing complex, it's just wrong. It disgusts me, and it makes me angry.
Even members of the ACHA chimed in. Charmaine Hall, a board member who lives in a property managed by the ACHA, says the rest of the board has been disrespectful in their dealings with residents, and communication has been inconsistent at best.
They always look at us like being mad and angry, or we being combative, but they don't understand what we're living through because none of them on the commissioner board lived it.
This isn't a Republican issue. It's not a Democrat issue. It's not a political issue. It is a human issue.
What part is going to be torn down and what's not? You know, are we going to be still have a home?
This stuff does need to be torn down, and we do need new housing, and it needs to be seamless.
The board applied to have Stanley Homes demolished in November. But 4 months later, residents say they don't know if that means they'll need to look for a new home. Residents tell me they've written to HUD Secretary Marcia Fudge, but they haven't heard back. Fudge announced earlier this week that she would resign a week from today.
She just wasn't doing the job for us. We contacted them, we finally got the audit done, but then when we said, man, this isn't enough, we can't wait another 6 months and another 6 months.
Van Drew says a criminal investigation into the ACHA could be a big help for residents. If that's no good, he says Congress could get involved and pass laws affecting local housing authorities.
More accountability. It's really obvious when you see what happened in New York City after the inspector general looked there. think about it, 70-some people were in on it, man. 70-some people getting money in their pockets that shouldn't have.
Later this month, Stanley Village residents plan on taking a bus to Washington to tell more people about their issues. We reached out to the ACHA for comment on the story, but didn't hear back. In Atlantic City, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
In our Spotlight on Business report, New Jersey is one step closer to making Governor Murphy's clean energy goals law. On Thursday, legislators moved three major climate bills, headlined by a bill that would speed up New Jersey's transition to 100% clean energy by 2035. Lawmakers tweaked the bill to prevent trash incinerators from counting as clean energy. That's a move environmental justice advocates have long sought. Another bill would spend hundreds of millions of dollars to update the state's aging electrical grid. And the final bill would propose amending the state constitution to enshrine residents' rights to clean air and water. The so-called Green Amendment would ultimately be decided by New Jersey voters. The approvals come after months of debate, and while the Grid Modernization Bill has wide backing, the other two remain contentious. Turning to Wall Street, stocks edged lower today, setting up the markets for a weekly loss. Here's how the trading numbers landed for the week.
Support for the Business Report provided by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its Renew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
And make sure to tune in to NJ Business Beat with Raven Santana this weekend. She marks Women's History Month by assessing the health of women-owned businesses in New Jersey and how this generation of women are paving the way for new entrepreneurs. Watch it Saturday at 5 p.m. and Sunday morning at 9:30 a.m. on NJPBS. May I have the envelope, please? Well, those words hold a special meaning for the roughly 100 senior medical students from Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine who are celebrating Match Day, where they'll begin their residency. Today, inside MetLife Stadium, the eager doctors-to-be opened their sealed envelopes, revealing the start of their new careers inside. Melissa Rose Cooper has the story.
Exciting moments as Nicholas Casarelli and his family get ready to celebrate the next big chapters of his medical career.
I'm very fortunate that on Monday I received the notification that I did match into orthopedic surgery, and now today I'm looking forward to finding out where I'll be spending the next 5 years.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Congratulations!
And with the strike of a gong, the big moment Casarelli had been waiting all day to find out was finally here.
There's no place I'd rather be but my number one HUMC!
Casarelli is one of roughly 100 seniors at Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine overcome with joy at this year's match day. Students attending the ceremony inside MetLife Stadium finding out for the first time where they'll be spending their residencies after graduating. The school's revealed once these black envelopes are opened.
The culmination is all these hours of studying, test taking, all that experience that you accumulated through the human dimension, all through the full run of your clerkships, all your clinical work now coming together here to bring you to the start of this great career ahead of you.
School of Medicine Dean Dr. Jeff Boskamp commending the students for their ability to tackle special challenges, especially having started their medical school journey during the pandemic.
It only spurred you on to study more, to work harder, to try to connect with each other in different ways.
I always wanted to be a doctor. My mom has stories of me telling her that I'll be a doctor one day and take care of her ever since I was a little girl.
Now Monifa King's mother is seeing her daughter's dream getting one step closer to reality right before her eyes.
I have to pinch myself to think that all the hard work came to this day, and I'm going to be a doctor and I'm going to care for communities that look like mine.
About 50% of the students will be placed at Hackensack Meridian Schools.
I know you will help us live our mission, which is to transform healthcare and to be the leader of positive change. There's no question in my mind you are going to make a difference in practicing medicine in our state, and you're going to make a big difference difference at our hospitals.
CEO Bob Garrett telling students he's optimistic about the future despite dealing with a fragmented healthcare system as well as a shortage of nurses and physicians.
When we started this medical school a few years ago, the idea behind it was that the only way we could really transform healthcare and have a bright future for healthcare is to start at the beginning, and that was to reinvent medical education. And I think we've done that with all of your help at the Hackensack Meridian School of Medicine.
And now the students know where they've been matched for their residencies. They have one more big event to look forward to before starting their programs. Graduation day in June. For NJ Spotlight News, I'm Melissa Rose Cooper.
That's going to do it for us, but make sure to tune in to Reporters Roundtable this weekend. David Cruz talks with gubernatorial candidate and Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop. Then a panel of local reporters break down this week's political headlines. Watch it Saturday at 6 p.m. and Sunday morning at 10 on NJPBS. Then on Chatbox, David continues the conversation about changes to the Open Public Records Act, talking to more experts about the political, public, and journalistic implications of the bill. That's Saturday night at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 10:30 on NJPBS. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be back on Monday.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. And RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
Our future relies on more than clean energy. Our future relies on empowered communities, the health and safety of our families and neighbors, of our schools and streets. The PSEG Foundation is committed to sustainability, equity, and economic empowerment, investing in parks, helping towns go green, supporting civic centers, scholarships, and workforce development that strengthen our community.